He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys. Baby, you can drive
my car. Hi to everybody on this week's show of Car Keys with Jay, Mike, and Robin. There's a couple of topics I'd like to start out with. One of them is, Jay and I have been talking, and Mike has chimed in several shows recently about drivers and vehicles that aren't in fully, properly operating condition. And I'm going to start out by going through 8 points of things that I would like to see people pay attention to, drivers, listeners, that is. And I also would like the manufacturers to be listening, but they don't because they're not in our broadcast area of reach. Headlights out of proper alignment is number one. I have noticed that in older cars, this is usually the case in trucks, headlights one or the other is very often out of alignment. And when it's out of alignment and shining in the wrong direction, which mainly means blinding drivers in oncoming cars, it's quite a nuisance. Number two, one side of the car lighting is not functioning. That can be both the front and the rear at the same time, or it can be a burned-out bulb, front or rear. But when you're in a line of cars in nighttime and you have lots of cars with properly operating headlights and you see one headlight not functioning or one-eyed headlight coming at you, is it a motorcycle or is it a car? It's very hard to tell. And then they're not in a line of cars, it's also hard to tell in a very dark road or a dark night and on a road when a vehicle with just one light in front is operating. And one light means that parking lights or the other lights that sometimes are also lit up on many cars are out or not present. You really can't tell whether it's a car because you can't see the silhouette of the vehicle until it gets very close to you.
Number three,
headlights not on at all after dark. We've talked about daytime running lights being on and the rear taillights not showing up because they are not lit when daytime running lights that are on are being used by people as headlights. But this is people that are driving cars after dark with no lights on the front lit up. Number four. I just sort of covered part of number four. Daytime running lights, mostly not an adequate substitute for headlights. You can very often with daytime running lights see the road very close to the car in front of you, but it's not going to shine ahead, which means that if deer jump out crossing the road beyond the headlights or the daytime running lights' ability to show the road, you may not see the deer until it's too late or until you hit it. Number five, rear brake lights not functioning when applied. I've been by a couple of vehicles, behind a couple of vehicles lately that have not had any taillights shining, but it's also been the case that when the brakes were applied, and you can tell that when you're approaching a stoplight behind a vehicle, and you know they've got to be using the brakes to slow down, nothing lights up in the back, letting you know they're slowing down. Six. I've already covered that. One or more of the front or rear lights are out. I've noticed that in many cases I've been sort of mentally watching cars coming at me, and I've noticed that GM pickups in the last 5 or 7 years or so have very often had one of their headlamps out, probably on the low beams, but you don't know. And I don't know whether they got a bad batch of headlights or not. I've got several vehicles which I have never had to replace a headlamp. And I think headlamps should be almost lifetime functioning. So that's number six. Headlights not dimmed by oncoming drivers when they are in cars that have a manual requirement of a stalk on the wheel to dim or brighten their lights. And then number eight is low beams on new pickup trucks. At least to be, I don't know what every all pickup trucks, but I've seen them be the case on newer, appear to be like high beams, and I assume it's when they are loaded in the rear, which causes the front end to be probably escalating the lighting, showing the headlights to escalate the amount of road that the low beams are trying to light up as they're coming at you. Jay, you got any additions?
I think you've covered a lot of points there. I just think that, we know headlights have become much more sophisticated than they have in the past, and if we drive newer modern cars, you know, you turn the wheel and you can see the light beam turning and following your direction.
At a certain speed level, right, as you slow down.
A lot of new cars now have the auto-dimming function, but you have to turn it on. So if it's not on, obviously it's not going to work. But if all that is set to work, the auto-dimming function works really, really well in most cars.
That is correct. I agree.
The lights, adjusting light height, I don't know how much of that we do on newer cars. It seems like it's a harder thing to do or not an issue anymore. But what is true is that normal beams have become very, very bright. And I guess the only tip you can give as a driver driving, coming on the other from the other side of the road, or the other direction, I mean, is not look at the lights. You know, you have to force yourself to look in the dark, in front of you, and try to find a reference point, something you can see alongside the road. But if you stare at the lights coming at you, you're going to be blinded even more, and you're going to see even less, even when the car has crossed you by.
That is absolutely correct. I agree, 120%.
That is just as much as you can do about people with high beams. What drives me nuts, and mostly on pickup trucks, but not only on pickup trucks, is these new light bars are mounted oftentimes on the bumpers.
Sometimes on the roof.
Sometimes on the roof. And I get that if you're going off-roading and you need extra light power, fine. But on the roads, I am not sure of the legality of them. And regardless of that, I just think it's inconsiderate, obnoxious. And, that's about it.
I wish they'd not use them that way. I agree. I was recently behind a vehicle, and it actually was a sedan that had a light bar between the headlamps down on the lower bumper. I don't know where you do attach them when you do get them. But it was a broad light bar of all very bright white light, and it was itself not blinding. It just was very obvious that there was more than the headlights showing the road ahead for that particular vehicle, and it was behind me, so it was not blinding me in the rearview mirror, and it did not appear to be blinding me. I didn't turn around to look at it because I was driving forward. But I agree with you on those light bars. I see them on pickup trucks more than I see anything on SUV type vehicles with those light bars, but they can be annoying if misused. And I don't think any of them need to be used when they're on the public roads.
Did you mention turn signals? Because I'm really amazed.
Yeah. Let's go to turn signals.
I'm amazed at how many cars today don't come with turn signals.
Well, they come with them, but nobody's using them.
Are we doing a special? Is it a two-hour-long show? Because we're going to need an hour and a half.
No, we don't need an hour to talk about turn signaling. And people are not using the turn signals.
What they do,
everybody is listening, please use your turn signals and turn them on at least, in my opinion, a tenth of a mile, which means you have to know when you're going to turn, so that the people behind you and coming at you know what you're going to do. Instead of going up to a place, maybe slowing down the car, and then coming to a stop and there's not a turn signal on, and you certainly, some people will try to drive around a car if there's room, thinking they can get by it, but if they're not turning left, they better watch out because they may be turning right.
And then there's the other one of the people that drive down the road with the turn signal on for miles.
And, you know, to that point, Jeep is the only manufacturer that I know of, because I have them, that has a annoying beep going on that comes on about 2 minutes after you've made the right turn if you forget to turn your flasher off. But none of my other cars have that, and it is very annoying also to drive behind somebody with a turn signal going on and on and on for miles, and you're preparing for it to make a turn, and it never turns. So good point, Mike, on both counts.
The common cure for all of this is, you know, if you get behind the wheel, first of all, know your vehicle, and if you're driving different cars and you have
learn the vehicle
in your garage and your fleet, some of them may be different, and try not to be oblivious to everybody else on the road.
Right. And to the point of getting beyond the DRLs when it gets dark, Jay, you made a good point in an earlier show about learn your car, but learn what the proper setting for the headlight switch is, which is auto. On the newer cars, you have auto. You do have an on override selection, and you have an off selection, and you have a parking light selection. But auto will take care of most of the problems that we did in our little early rant section on this show, if you set your switch on auto, if you have a car that has the auto setting on it.
Yeah, but they don't have that for turn signals.
No, they don't.
Turn signals require that the driver be aware of what they're doing, be considerate of other people on the road, and just you have to operate your turn signal. You were right on how you set it to be ahead of the time, but you know there is no auto for turn signals. That's got to be in your brain. If you're going to drive, you have to use turn signals.
I thought you were going to say if you're going to drive, you need a brain.
Well, yeah, that too. You know, we could also get a Neuralink and put in there, and then you could think about your turn signals and make them happen.
Okay, all let's right. move on. Jay, do you have a topic to move on to, or shall I keep going?
Motor Trend's Car of the Year, the Mercedes E-Class. The Mercedes E-Class, I think this is the 10th generation of the car. The E-Class Mercedes is Mercedes' original run-of-the-mill sedan, not their biggest car, which is usually called the S-Class, and in the last 20, 30 years, they've had a smaller car, the C-Class. So it's a sedan and a wagon. There is a wagon variant of the car. And even though it looks very much the same as the previous generation, it's an all-new car. And as usual, Mercedes just has made everything just a little better. It is powered by every manufacturer has a four-cylinder turbo engine putting out about 250 horsepower. Mercedes has got to like having what they call the mild hybrid. So it's just a little extra boost with a small electric motor that is added to the engine. And the main function is really to make the engine smoother and have the power come at lower RPMs and just smoother power delivery. So it does everything better than the previous generation. You probably won't recognize it when you see it going down for the first time. But it's a great car.
But it's a whole line of E-Class cars that got the Car of the Year, right? It's not just the electric ones.
The E-Class is an ICE car, okay?
Okay.
The EQ class is an electric car. It's a totally different class. We're talking here about fossil fuel for fossil people. Run-of-the-mill Mercedes. It's very comfortable. It does everything well. And the base engine is the four-cylinder turbo, which you can get in all-wheel drive, or you can get it in just rear-wheel drive. The optional engine, which is their inline six, is available only in all-wheel drive, and probably every other model is going to be all-wheel drive only.
I do not know what the starting price for those Mercedes are. Is it affordable at any level, in your opinion? And affordability, I think we'd have to talk about, and for the general populace, would be in the mid-$40,000 range and down.
Well, the short answer then is no, it's not affordable by your definition of affordable.
Okay.
But, you know, affordability is a...
Well, it's selective.
Yeah. So I don't know the pricing, but I would imagine that it's in the $60,000, $70,000 range, starting
right.
point.
Certainly, as you go up in the options list, it would be up in that area. It might come in and maybe as lucky as $59,995 or something. But I think you're right with the analysis of Motor Trend's choice. I've actually been impressed with the visual looks of the recent Mercedes improvements as part of the recent Mercedes improvements, and I know they produce a good car. As I have said to many people, however, if you buy a foreign-produced car, and we're talking about the Mercedes, Audi, BMW group, and maybe you add Jaguar, which is now barely surviving at the moment. We'll see if they successfully resuscitate their brand in the U.S. Going forward, but I'm not sure that it's going to be satisfactory. These European cars, I know, are reliable, but historically, once they're out of warranty, they have been generally far more expensive to pay for repairs out of warranty than the American brands have been, and I do not know too much about the cost of the Asian lines of cars, the Japanese and the Koreans, as far as repair costs. I've had not enough problems on my Hyundai, which is a Korean-based car, to know what the repair costs are. Well, to use the word outrageous, I would say would be applied to the European brands, but I don't have anything to measure personally to know what the repair cost differences are now between those three continent types of vehicles.
I think historically, and it kind of is in our culture that, you know, Japanese cars, when they came out in the 70s and 80s, or when they started reaching our market, were known and built a reputation on reliability and affordability, right? I mean, that is
yes.
the whole thing about Toyota, Datsun back then, Nissan, and I think Hyundai and Kia is the same, you know.
I think the same reliability impression is still there. I think it might be more applicable to buying used vehicles and buying a used vehicle to think that those lines of cars would be more reliable than the Europeans. But I don't have any. There's no measurement of that to be stating any of this as a fact on our show.
So I just want to. Psychological factors here come into play.
Yeah.
I read something recently about Subaru CVT. So Subarus have this reputation of being super reliable. People expect them to go 300,000 miles. And there have been cases of a large number of cases of issues with their CVT transmission. Continuously variable transmission, so gearless automatic transmission, right? And I have one of those. I have one of those transmissions in a Forester. It's got close to 170,000 miles, and I've never had an issue with it. But my daughter has an Impreza, and at around 70,000 miles, the transmission did fail. And even though the car was out of warranty by a long shot, I mean, she didn't drive all that much, so the car was 6 or 7 years old and had, you know, I think it was like around 70,000 miles. This was a couple of years ago. And after cross-shopping a few dealers, one of them did do the whole repair replacement of the transmission under warranty. So sometimes... Some of these manufacturers have issues that they're aware of and will repair them, you know, on their...
Beyond the warranty period, right? Those manufacturers are to be lauded, and they get my big approval when they go beyond the call of duty and do it without a whole lot of fighting from the owner and or anybody else who might be advocating on their front, meaning a lawyer. We know right now that Toyota is getting in the process of replacing the engines on 100,000 or so Tundra pickup trucks, and they're doing it ahead of people having specific problems with them. They discovered that some of these engines, and I don't think there were 100,000 falsely built engines, but they're doing 100,000 plus or minus. It's going to take a long time. It's going to cost a lot of money. But those pickup, those Tundra owners will be very pleased if they haven't had problems at having their trucks have their engines replaced. This is the second major recall that Toyota, Jay, hold on. This is the second major recall that Toyota has done to vehicles of their lines. The other one was were the frames of the Tacoma pickups. And they replaced thousands of frames of the Toyota Tacoma pickups for owners. And it didn't matter how old they were. A friend of mine who had one for 10 years got his frame included in that pickup.
Yeah,
in that,
so they've turned a real negative into a positive, right? Because
that's right. They turned a real negative into a positive.
The point of braking is kind of a pretty inexcusable situation for a major manufacturer like Toyota.
To have produced, right.
And the Tacoma has a great reputation. I mean, this is a medium-sized truck.
I think it's the top-selling medium-sized pickup truck in the country, if not the world.
Yes. And so this brings me to something else. Not totally related, not related at all, but kind of in the same vein of thinking. Why is the new Honda Prologue, which is Honda's first electric vehicle, outselling by a large margin the Chevy Blazer electric vehicle,
which I think is superb.
It's the same vehicle.
Chevy Blazer.
So the Honda is a Chevy. Honda has very little input. They design maybe the exterior features are a little different. The tuning of certain parts of it may be different, but it basically is a Chevy Blazer.
I have the answer for you in one word.
Okay,
it's a Honda. Those are three words, but it's a name. It's a brand.
Okay.
We go back to what we just said about the reliability factor of the Japanese and the Korean vehicles'
perception.
Reputations over decades.
Yep. Okay.
And I think that's the answer. But I think the Chevy is a great vehicle. I'm seeing some, but I don't really recognize them right away, whether the electric ones or not. But I've heard nothing. I've read nothing but good things about it, and the pricing is also very good. So
yes, it's
an American-based vehicle built. It may have some Japanese parts components to it, but you said the Honda has got Chevy components in it, meaning the battery and the electric drivetrain. Is it? I don't know the answer
to
that.
Yes, absolutely. I don't know where. I should have checked on that. I don't know where the Prologue, the Honda, is built. I mean, I'm sure it's built here in the U.S., but I don't know if it actually comes off a GM assembly line or if Honda actually produces it.
It is a different vehicle configuration than the GM one. Isn't the GM one sort of more of a taller? I don't know. What is the model? Is it the Trax?
What, for the
Chevy? GM version of the Prologue? Honda's outselling the GM version. What is? I'm not sure what the body style is. Is it considerably different than the Prologue?
The Prologue
looks like a low slung,
look different.
Small station wagon.
No, it's crossover SUV.
Yeah, it's a crossover, but it's still. I don't know whether there's a significant difference in styling of the two.
There is a pretty. They're very different looking, actually.
Okay.
And in my mind, the Honda does look
back
better.
Back to pickups for a moment.
Sure.
The Jeep Gladiator is in death. Well, Jay, you might consider it to be in its throes of death because the sales have just plummeted in the Gladiator pickup truck, as opposed to the Tacomas and even the Rangers and the Colorados, which are Ford and Chevy brands alike in their GMC see equivalents. And as I look at the picture of the article I'm reading about, the headline says, Gladiator's tumbling sales prompt layoffs, which has to do with the production. I've read the guts of the article allude to the problems that I think that I have personally felt was a problem, and that was it was mispriced from the start, and it was misordered by dealerships from the start, meaning that the dealers were getting loaded vehicles that had the Gladiators loaded in the high 50s to even low 60s for what is a mid-sized pickup truck. And
okay, here's my take on it.
That's the end of that topic.
Well, gentlemen, on that point, we are reaching the end of the show.
Well, that's a shame. I just want to say that the Gladiator, it was a novelty vehicle, and like every novelty just fizzled.
You get a saturation point eventually of the novelty. Will the Tesla truck be a novelty vehicle? Yes.
Rivians. Yes. We'll talk about them next time.
Next time.
There's always a next time.
With that, we are Car Keys, Robin, Mike, and Jay.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.